From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. And, of course, along with your calls, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, exercise, caffeine, what is better for your memory?
Okay.
And how about keeping a plant on that desk of yours in the workplace? Does it really make a difference? Do the mother-in-law's tongues, one of those green plants with kind of the spears on it, I can still remember where they were on my desk because I hardly need any light at all, does that make you happier?
Okay.
Exactly.
What's our recipe?
Cheesy tofu quiche with spinach. I know, Tom, you're going to love it because you love tofu.
Tofu. 800-462-7413 is our number if you have a question for Zorba. 1-800-462-7413. Let's welcome our first caller now, Zorba, a listener in Janesville, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Hi, I have a question for Dr. Zorba. I have a schwannomal cyst on the peroneal nerve running down my leg, behind my knee to the side, and it's quite painful at times. I've been told from my doctor, whom I adore, that it is... We don't want nerve damage where I could have drop foot.
Right, right. A schwannoma is basically benign, meaning it doesn't spread. It's not malignant. It doesn't spread somewhere else. It's not benign because it causes problems of the nerve.
Okay.
Yeah. So what kind of symptoms do you have?
Well, at times, Dr. Zorba, I'll have like electric shock almost running down my leg. And interestingly, the more I exercise, I feel like the more I build the muscle around the side, it's less painful.
Sure.
And I, you know, as I age, I think, gee, am I going to be 90 years old with this thing? What am I going to do?
Well, first of all, what did your doc recommend? They didn't recommend removing it, did they? Because they're worried you have foot drop, and foot drop is far worse than having electrical pain.
Right.
You
know,
if you don't have it. How often do you get the electrical pain?
You know, it's about, it's interesting, maybe biweekly in the evening. It's usually in the evening.
Okay, sure. How long does it last?
It usually lasts sometimes a couple minutes, and then I get up, drink a lot of water, rub it with some horse liniment. You'll laugh at that. And then...
How about WD-40? Why don't you rub it with WD-40?
That would be better.
There we go. Although I've got a suggestion here, but please go on.
Yeah.
So, Les, is this when you go to sleep or before you go to sleep, when you're watching television? Of course, you only watch public television, I'm sure. But
exactly.
when does it actually bother you? When you go to sleep, is that it, or just when you're hanging
around? Especially, and if someone if I were to hit it or somebody touches it or if I'm exercising... It'll bring me down to my knees.
Sure. Well, I've got a couple suggestions. First of all, you don't want to have it removed unless you have to have it removed because you run a risk of a foot drop, and that means you've got to wear an appliance all the time to keep your foot up. Can't go walking as much. It's hard to get around. Hiking, big issue. You don't want to go there. And it sounds to me like they have not recommended that, right?
Yeah, I have not recommended that.
Okay, so now we've got to treat the pain. How do we treat the pain? A couple of ideas. First of all, I recommend a topical liniment, diclofenac gel, 1%. So diclofenac gel, which used to be very expensive, it's not. One tube, pretty big tube. You can get a tube. Go to goodrx.com, good, G-O-O-D-R-X.com. Pull down a coupon, and you can get a tube now for about $25. Big tube for $25. When it was name brand and not generic, same tube. Cost $325. Now it costs $25. And it may be covered by your coinsurance, but bring in the coupon. Sometimes the coupon is better than the coinsurance. Rub that on 2 to 3 times a day. It's an anti-inflammatory. It does not have the side effects typically with oral anti-inflammatories, and that may reduce the inflammation within the nerve and the skin. I do that 2 to 3 times a day, every single day. Do it for 6 to 8 weeks. See what happens. That's what I would do. Number two, gabapentin oral pill works well for neuropathic pain. If it bothers you at night, take 300 to 600 milligrams, maybe at 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. People usually get used to it. Some people get sleepy with it. I use it for people for sleep. Some people don't, but they adjust to it. And if you're getting neuropathic pain, especially at night, gabapentin, some people take it 300 milligrams 3 times a day, but if you're only having an evening time, I'd probably take it at 5 or 6, 300 to 600 milligrams. But I would do the diclofenac gel first, and I would do the gabapentin second. You can use them both together.
Thank you so much. This has really helped.
You're welcome.
I'm going to check that okay.
That's right. Both of them are by prescription, so you got to call your doc for both of them.
Thank you a lot for the call. We appreciate it.
Take care.
All right. Enjoy your day.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413.
You know, this is really kind of what the show is about. So here it is. You're sitting there. You're thinking about it. She's gone to her doctor. And the doctor said, you've got a schwannoma, which is this, quote, benign tumor. It's not benign because she has side effects. But for some reason, there wasn't enough of a connection so that she complained about pain. So the doctor might look and say, well, we've got a couple of options here. And I don't know where the mismatch was, but that's the whole idea about health literacy. Is that if you listen to health, you read about health, you do something about health, you will actually get better health care. Mm-hmm. Because here it is, there was a mismatch, and because she's listening really to public radio and she's interested in health, she'll call up and she actually will get better health condition. She'll have better health because she called up and she had an interest to it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why we have to learn about health ourselves. The buck stops here. It stops with everyone as an individual.
So let's see. That's the way the show works. If someone calls with a problem and you answer the question.
That's it. After more than 2 decades, we finally figured it out. You got it, Tom. You got it.
That number is 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And before our next call, Zorba, exercise boosts memory?
Yeah, as much as caffeine. You know, I mean, maybe we should forget about exercise and just drink more coffee, which is not what the study was about.
Yeah.
But it looked at brisk walks. Very interesting, because when I read the review of the study, it said brisk walks as little as 20 minutes. Well, I think 20 minutes is actually a nice walk, because you can do a mile in 20 minutes. I mean, that's really pretty good. Looking at it and how it improves working memory. Now, we know the most common drug in the world, caffeine, actually improves working memory. Now, you may not remember, Tom, but back in the day when New Amsterdam was formed, which is New York City, and the Dutch introduced coffee as something that they would drink in the morning. Do you remember what the New Englanders drank in the morning when the Dutch drank coffee? That's right.
Well, I never was in New England as a young person.
You weren't back in the 16th. The New Englanders got up and they drank a cup of rum. So the Dutch drank a cup of coffee and the New Englanders drank a cup of rum. Who was more efficient in their morning duties, which is why they took over New York? But anyway.
But who was happier?
Yeah, but who was Well, that's another story.
Yeah.
But by getting to look at effects of caffeine and coffee, they looked at working memory. Working memory is our ability to store and manipulate information that we have to do, like on a grocery list, recalling what you have to do in the morning, setting up your to-do list. That's working memory. And frankly, when we're done with it, we forget about it. I don't remember what was on the grocery list yesterday. I mean, so that's called working memory. And they looked at caffeine and exercise separately. So they took some people, they did a 20-minute walk. That's what they did, 20-minute walk, and then they tested their working memory. Other people did not have a 20-minute walk. They had a good, strong cup of coffee and, once again, tested their working memory. And they basically looked – and it was really a mug of coffee equal to about two cups of coffee. And what they found was both of these improved working memory. So the coffee in the morning that you take – do you drink coffee in the morning?
No.
That explains a lot. You know, I've been wondering about you. That explains it. You got to drink that coffee. But I drink a good 2 cups of coffee, and sometimes I'll add a shot of espresso to it. Mm-hmm. And about 20 minutes later, half an hour later, I do notice a difference. But they also found the same difference occurred with a 20-minute brisk walk. And I think this is kind of an important, interesting study, because we know about the benefits of exercise. We hear about the benefits of exercise, and yet we are slug bugs. We sit, we don't exercise, we make excuses. I'm as bad as everyone else. Am I going to walk today? Mm. What am I going to do? I'll set up. I'll have good intentions in the morning. I don't necessarily make it in the afternoon and the evening. I try to do it. But more and more, we learn about how important it is. But this is important in functioning. So in other words, if you go to work, you get off a bus, you get off an elevated train, you park your car, and you walk for 20 minutes, mm-hmm. that may be improve what you're actually doing at work in the morning. And so it's another reason to exercise maybe throughout the day. In other mm-hmm. words, you don't just go and do it three times a day, but hey, you're going to get up and you're going to walk for 10 or 20 minutes. Now, here's something interesting. If it's wintertime and you're in the house and you're not going out very much at all, as a lot of senior citizens are, if they walk around for 10 minutes, mm-hmm. their head might be brighter and clearer. And maybe part of the problem that we have, and I just thought about this, when we have the winter blues and the winter blahs and we're in the house, is the fact that we're not moving around. Maybe it's not that we just feel shut in, but we don't do anything. And then our memory fogs up and we don't feel as good. Mm. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, what was our topic again?
I can't remember. That's exactly it. Oh, my goodness. This man needs caffeine.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Chicago, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. How are you? This is Jenny.
Yeah, hi. How can we help?
So my question comes from the fact that this year I'm going to be turning 40, and I'm trying to look at the different things that I do related to my health as far as being preventative, mm-hmm. And just have some questions in general of what are the things that I need to be doing at this point for my health?
Sure.
And a slight caveat to that as well is, so I have a health savings account. Mm-hmm. I have a gynecologist that I see annually, but other than that, what are doctors that I should have relationships with as well, too, versus using those, you know, the walk-in clinics and whatnot?
Now, I have a question for you before we start. So you see a gynecologist annually. What occurs mm-hmm. there?
Just the annual pap smear.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, if you look up a 40-year-old, if you've had a negative HPV and you've had a negative pap smear, you need, based on certain things, you'll need a pap smear every 3 to 5 years. You don't need an annual pap smear. If you're getting a pap smear annually, you're getting too many pap smears. You don't need it.
Okay, I'll put that on the list.
That's very important. I'm very serious. That's a very important thing, because if your gynecologist is not paying attention to the recommendations, then I have to look it up every single time. It's either every 3 years or every 5 years. I believe you're on a 5-year cycle. You don't need your gynecologist every year. You don't have to go in, get a pap smear, get tested. You don't need to actually have that. And that's a very important thing. There's something called over-testing, where we test more than we need to, and there's no reason to do that. So that's number one. The next step, where do we fit with diet and exercise? We know now more than anything else that following the king of diets, the Mediterranean diet, pays off 20, 30, 40, 50 years later. And being the right weight makes a big difference in your 40s. There's more and more data that shows that what we do in the 40s affect how we die, whether or not we die prematurely from heart disease in our 60s, 70s, and 80s. And although we worry as a woman, women worry about breast cancer, good reason to worry, good reason to get screened, they are far more likely, 3 times more likely to 4 times more likely to die prematurely from heart disease than they are from breast cancer. Mm. So a Mediterranean diet and daily exercise. What's daily exercise? Doing something every day, you know, getting up and doing something every day. So what have you done for exercise over the last week?
So I take, because I'm in Chicago and I work mm-hmm. in the Loop, mm-hmm. I take the train. So if nothing else happens, I walk to the train and mm-hmm. then walk from the train to my office twice a day, which does help. And then
do you have a step counter or a pedometer?
I do, but I don't really watch those. It's probably about 20 minutes. It's a 20-minute walk each way.
Excellent.
Then I usually get to the gym mm-hmm. about 3 times a week.
You are doing more than 90% of the women your age. It's 80 or 90%. If you're doing 20 minutes of walking, 10, you know, when you're working, when you're going to work, 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening, even 10 and 10, and you're hitting the gym 3 days a week, you are now in that upper quartile, that upper, it's even more than a quartile. It's probably that upper 10%. That is going to pay off. That will pay off along with diet. Now, like you say, what sort of relationship with doctors? You don't need to see doctors that much. The screening tests that we do, the only cancers that have been proven that are worthwhile beyond pretty much colon cancer at the age of 50, you know, starting that every 10 years, 5 years if you're going to use the Exact Science Cologuard, every 10 years if you have a colonoscopy, starting at 50, mammogram starting at 50, pap smears, if I'm correct, it's every 3 to 5 years. I think you're on a 5-year cycle more likely. That's about it. So you're doing the right stuff. Staying away, of course, from refined sugars, refined food, thinking about food. And the other thing that we just talked about that's important is health literacy. We know that people who have health literacy and read all the times of health stay better. And I want to talk to you about the other thing that we rarely discuss with longevity, Alzheimer's disease. The Framingham study has shown beyond a doubt that if you are health educated and if you don't smoke and you exercise, the reduction in the prevalence of Alzheimer's appears to have dropped since the 1970s by about 35% to 40% in all groups but one, high school dropouts. High school dropouts have the same rate of Alzheimer's disease as they had in 1975. And that's because they smoke more, they don't put on their seat, you know, they drink more. I mean, they're all of the issues that have to do with high school dropouts. So health education is going to be, if you will, the stimulus, the caffeine that's going to keep you going.
Okay. Can I ask one more with this, too,
of course.
Kind of related?
Of course.
So both you brought up, I think another two areas that I'd be very curious about is, as far as alcohol, what's a healthy amount of that that's not too much?
Oh, sure.
Well as sleeping. How much sleep should I be getting?
Sure. Two things with that. First of all, the recommendation is 1 to 2 drinks a day, and you're in a safe zone. You know, you might have more drinks on the weekend, and I'm talking about when you watch the Bears, though I'm a Packers fan. When you that's the Bears, that's different. But generally, for women, it's recommended that it's safe to have a drink a day. Should it be 2 drinks a day? There's some questions about that, but there are no questions about a drink a day. And I think the literature shows that actually alcohol is beneficial. I think that. And I have other people that push back on that. But the data on alcohol is really pretty good that shows a drink a day is good for you. And it can be red wine. It can be a beer. It actually can be some, you know, it can be a Bloody Mary. It's just alcohol that appears to be good. Sleep is really good. You bring up an important point. It's about somewhere between 7 and 8 hours of sleep, and it means being in bed and resting. You may not sleep that entire time, but you're doing something to your brain. You're putting it at rest, and we now think that these neural connections in the brain, so much occurs during sleep. And when you look at it from an evolutionary point of view, why would humans be favored for sleep? I mean, they're sleeping, and they can be hurt when they actually sleep, but the answer is this brain that sucks out 20% of our energy at rest, 20% of our energy. It's an energy suck. This brain needs to take a break and make neuronal connections, and that's where sleep plays a role. Reduction in diabetes, and it appears to be a role in reduction in heart disease. So somewhere between 7 and 8 hours. Hope that helps.
That helps very much. Thank you so much. I've written all down a lot of notes.
And as I said, you do not need yearly pap smears. And I would definitely question your doctor. And I would bring up an important point. Why is your doctor doing yearly pap smears when ACOG, which is the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, does not recommend yearly pap smears? That's the real question. And the reason I bring that up is you have to consider whether or not your doctor is up to date.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Thanks for your call.
We appreciate it. Now, she's not noting all of this. Is this going to be on the test?
Yeah, it's going to be on the test, Tom. That's exactly right. But you got to take a brisk walk or a double shot espresso before you take that test.
Before the break now, Zorba, time for the segment where an honest-to-Pete doctor, that's you, squares off against the mighty Internet. We call it Google Doc.
I need maracas. That's it. Maracas? Is that what they're called, those little things?
The following email came to us from a Wisconsin listener named Nellie. Dear Dr. Zorba, I am 68 and am considering the new shingles shot, but have heard or read many horror stories about the second shot. On your show, you said that both you and Tom had it without any problems. I had the older shot about 8 years ago, and no, this new one is different. I know shingles can be awful. One friend lost part of her vision, so learning about your experience would be helpful. Do I have anything to worry about?
I don't think you have anything to worry about. First of all, I have no idea why her friend lost vision. That is not a known side effect of the shingle shot. Hmm. And there should not be horror stories. But, of course, you know, look on the web. When I do things on the web and I write something, the anti-vaccinators are always commenting that I'm bought out by Big Pharma, you know, and somebody else is telling me what to do, and there's a monkey on my back and not to listen to me. So when you look on the web, you're going to find a lot of anti-stuff on the web where people actually have issues. What you want to do is you want to look at verifiable sources. Now, you have a choice. You don't need to have the shingles shot. You run a risk of having shingles. The first shot is about 40 to 50% effective. The new shot is about 90 to 95% effective. The side effects are absolutely minimal. Most people may have a little pain at the site of the shot, but you get pain at the site of a tetanus shot. So my recommendation stands pure and clear. Get the shingles shot. It works. And I am not bought by the pharmaceutical industry.
Have a question for the good doc. He's always happy to inject his medical wisdom into the show. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our tasty recipe coming up, along with more of your calls and another interesting topic to talk about, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number to call is 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But Zorba, before our next call, cheesy tofu quiche with spinach.
I know. You know, when you say the word tofu, there's just a Cheshire smile on your face. You go, give it to me. Give me more tofu. And when I think of tofu, I think, when am I going to have a great big bowl of tofu and just go into it, which, of course, nobody does. Well, some people do, but most people do not just eat tofu. Well,
this is a great recipe for tofu haters because there are like 15 different ingredients
that can hide the tofu. They hide the tofu. That's exactly it. But, you know, this is probably a recipe developed by the Tofu Society of America, which I'm sure exists from tofu makers. So cheesy tofu quiche. It's a quiche with spinach. And let's get to it. So pie crust. So my best way to make a pie crust is one of two ways, either to buy it in the store or to buy it in the store. I buy the Pillsbury pie crust. Why? It's better than I can make. I roll it out, put it in the pan. If I want to use the second pie crust on top, I'll do it because I cannot make a pie crust. And if there is a listener out there listening to this who can send me a pie crust recipe that's foolproof that I can do, I would welcome it.
And I would actually try it.
So get a store-bought pie crust. That's what I would do. Or make your own.
Yeah.
3 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
3 big teas. olive oil.
Third of a cup of onion, thinly sliced. Onion of your choice.
Third of a cup onion, thinly sliced.
1.5 cups of broccoli, roughly chopped.
1.5 cups broccoli, roughly chopped.
3/4 cup of mushrooms sliced.
3/4 cup mushroom sliced.
3 cloves of garlic.
3 cloves of garlic.
And now, 12 ounces of extra firm tofu pressed. Ta-da!
Okay, 12 ounces or less if you'd like. Extra firm tofu pressed.
You could probably make this without tofu and it would taste good, actually. But I am not going to suggest that since the title of this is Cheesy Tofu Quiche with Spinach. 8-ounce package of shredded cheddar cheese.
8-ounce package, shredded cheddar cheese.
A 1/2 cup of nutritional yeast. Nutritional yeast will add a flavor. It's not bread yeast. It's called nutritional yeast, and it has an umami flavor to it. Umami is the 5th taste in our mouth.
1/2 cup nutritional yeast.
You're going to use a couple of tablespoonfuls of water.
2 big tea water.
Teaspoon of salt.
Little tea salt.
1/2 teaspoon of pepper.
1/2 little tea pepper.
1/2 teaspoon of dried basil.
1/2 little tea dried basil.
If you can write this down, that's amazing. 1/4 teaspoon of cayenne pepper if you like it hot, like Penny does.
1/4 little tea cayenne pepper.
And 1 cup of fresh spinach not packed down.
Okay. Fresh spinach, not packed down.
Let's put it together. Yeah, that's a lot of rest. You know, it's a lot of stuff in it. Yeah. But it works. Preheat the oven to 400 degrees, 400, and then in a large pan, saute the onion, broccoli, mushrooms, and garlic. Start with the garlic for about 1/2 minute and throw the other stuff in the olive oil. Cover it for about 8 minutes. Don't let the broccoli get too tender because it's going to continue cooking in the oven. So look at it. You want it to be sort of al dente? In a food processor, combine, so you're going to smush it down, the tofu, the cheese, the nutritional yeast, the water, the salt, the pepper, the basil. Blend it well. Pour the mixture into the pan of vegetables, that whole mixture, and then remove it from the stove. Stir in the fresh spinach. Afterwards, pour the filling into the pie crust. Bake for 30 minutes. Remove it from the oven at about 30 minutes when the center appears to be done. Let it sit for 5 minutes and... That's dinner. 6 people. He actually has 6 servings.
Now, there might be a listener out there who wasn't able to write all that down.
You know
as
what?
We're talking.
If they don't have access to a computer, Gigi does not actually take care of that anymore. So you've got to go to ZorbaPastor.org, ZorbaPastor.org, get that recipe. See some pictures of Tom and I. Learn a bit more about us. I'd like to learn a bit more about us, too. That's ZorbaPastor.org or through Facebook.
I don't need anybody to know much about him. I don't have anything interesting in my
life. I don't know. You're an interesting guy. Anyway. You've been doing it for interesting times, but they can look at the pictures, and then they can picture you.
Yeah. This hour is the only kind of, you know.
That's it. That's the stimulation.
Yeah. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hey, Dr. Zorbit. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, I am a middle-aged, in my early 70s, lady, widowed, and I have this friend, and he's a widow, and we have a lot of good sex, and we go dancing, and I was just wanting to know if that is... seems to be okay, and isn't that, like, good exercise for both of us? He's in excellent health, and I am, too. He don't take no medicine, and I don't either. And I was just wanting to know what you thought about our sex life, and... is it okay?
Of course.
I mean, I know it's okay.
Of course. But, you know, you bring up a really, really interesting point. And for many, many years, when I was younger, when I'm middle-aged, when I'm older, and I like what you said, a middle-aged lady in her 70s, it's very interesting that when older people within our society talk about sex, It's not looked at the same way as when 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds talk about sex. Mm-hmm. So within society, it's like, well, 20, 30, and 40, you're supposed to talk about sex and have an active sex life. But when you're 70, you're supposed to say, oh, no, I'm not going to have an active sex life. That's really not a good idea. I should have sort of given that up. That's not what it is. When we know that having an active sex life throughout, it's human nature. It's a wonderful thing. It's what I call a salubrient, which is something that's good for your health. It is good exercise. Mm-hmm. Sex is good exercise. Yeah. It makes you feel good. You're a widow. He's a widower. You're a widow.
And companionship. And he's 91.
He's 91.
Whoa.
Wow, that is...
And we go dancing, we go to music, gospel singings, and, country and western music.
Uh-huh.
He's real active, and I am, too.
C&W. So how'd you find this 91-year-old? Was he a friend or what?
He was a long-time friend, mm-hmm. and then after we lost our spouses,
right.
we got together,
uh-huh.
and it just started working out good uh-huh. for both of us.
Yeah. It's so wonderful. You've taken, first of all, we humans like companionship. We want to be surrounded by other people. We are social people. But the other thing is, as you get older, you get touched less and less. So I look at my daughter, Vanessa, she's my fourth child, just had a baby. What do you do with babies all the time? You touch them all the time. You lift them, you move around, breastfeeding, touching the baby. And as we get older and older, we touch each other less and less. You look at young people, you look at kids walking at school in third grade and fourth grade, they hug each other, they play with each other. You know, they play with each other in terms of sports. When they're done, they do that. As we get older, it often is looked down upon, and it is an ageism. That's exactly what it is. So the answer is, and of course you knew the answer, you guys are doing everything right. You know, he basically robbed the cradle when he started going with you because you're 21 years younger.
Yes, but our sex is real good. I mean, you know, he don't have to take no pills or nothing, and he don't have to have no pills to start him or anything.
I got to tell you something. You both have a loving relationship. You have a wonderful time, and this is a wonderful chapter in your life. And thank you for sharing this, because you might just tip the tipping point of a scale for other people. I have a number of people that I often see in my practice where they're older, in their 70s, and they've been widowed, and they'd like to start a relationship, but they don't think it's right for them to start a relationship, and that is the wrong attitude. Mm-hmm. The answer is, it's always the right time to start a relationship, and you guys are leading the way. I love
it. Well, we both enjoy it real good, and we enjoy each other.
Well, you keep it up, literally and figuratively.
Thank you, Dr. Zorbit, and I love listening to your show.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for sharing that with us.
We so appreciate your call. Thanks. 800-462-7413.
You know, when you think about this, and it's rather interesting, we don't look at articles about sex and talk about sex on this show, because we just don't do it. Why? Because it's a Victorian society. So you don't mention, we talk about diet, we talk about exercise, we may talk about companionship, mm-hmm. but we really talk about sex and sexual function or intimacy. May not just be sex, mm-hmm. intimacy, mm-hmm. it's touching mm-hmm. as you get older and older. And it's things even like massage, if you don't have anyone around to actually touch you. And we're going to do some other, I'm going to look up some research on this as time goes on through the show, because I think she brings up an excellent point. It's not as acceptable in your 70s and 90s as it is in your 18s and 28s and 38s.
Before the break now, Zorba, time again to kick off our comfy sneakers and trudge our way through the muddy ravines of medical quackery. This is Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Okay, Zorba, on the
Quack. Quack.
Where did that come from?
On the
Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page, we received a message from a listener named Bruce. He asked about a book he saw about earthing, which is basically trying to get health benefits from walking around barefoot, Bruce wrote. Zorba, does earthing qualify as quackery, or is it a big threat to the drug companies? One of the authors of this book is a cardiologist, and the other is a cable guy. Okay, Zorba, first tell us about earthing, and then give us your take on it.
Well, first of all, I mean, earthing, the idea of earthing is you're walking barefoot on the grass. Well, I think that's kind of nice. Do you like walking barefoot on grass?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It makes you feel really good. But the idea behind it, earthing or grounding, is that you're in close proximity to the Earth's subtle electric charge. And it's the electric charge that actually is making you feel better. And because the book is written by a cardiologist and a cable guy, the cardiologist knows a lot about your heart, and the cable guy, of course, knows about electricity. It must be true. So is there science behind it? Well, the idea is that these electrons connect us with atoms. The negatively charged particles in the earth will take care of the positively charged particles in the bottom of our soles and our feet. I could go on with this forever and ever. You know, is the science behind this make any sense? I don't think there's any science. I mean, if you use the word atom, does that mean you're a scientist? Because, or an atomic scientist? Because use the word atom? No. But I do think walking close to Earth actually makes you feel good. And the reality is, I don't think it's a threat to the big pharma that makes antibiotics. I don't think it's going to do anything, but it's going to make you feel good. So what I call a quackery, well, the electrons, I guess I would call that quackery, but I wouldn't call walking barefoot quackery. I would call that good for you.
Yes. Do you have a question about medical quackery? Well, Zorba's always happy to put his foot down and weigh in with an answer. Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, another interesting topic to talk about, our medical mythbuster as well, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But Zorba, before our next call, here's a way to reduce workplace stress.
That's right. Put a plant on your desk and you'll feel better. But actually, this particular study showed you actually do. Now, did you ever, when you were working full-time, did you ever have plants in the office?
No.
No. Did you feel stressed?
I don't know, a little bit, I guess.
Yeah. Now, when Monica was working, she had plants in her office, didn't she?
I guess she did,
yeah. Yeah, she probably did. And a lot of people have plants in the office. And the question is whether or not these plants actually affect you. So there was an electric company in Japan who decided they were going to do a study, which, by the way, showed that about roughly a quarter of the people actually had less stress when they actually had plants in the desk. So let me tell you about the study. So first of all, to gauge stress levels, they have a standardized test called the State Trait Anxiety Inventory Index. So they ask you, how are you feeling? Do you feel stressed today from 1 to 10 and so on? So they had a week-long control period during which participants measured their pulse during the day, talked about whether or not they felt fatigued, and then they gazed at their desktop for 3 minutes. No plant.
Okay.
I would find that stressful myself. But anyway, gazed at their desktop for 3 minutes. Then they were given a plant, their favorite plant. They got to choose. It could be a mother-in-law's tongue, could be a hydrangea, mm-hmm. whatever plant you wanted to have. They were told how to water the plant, how to care for the plant.
Okay.
The plant would become their friend. I mean, you're laughing, but plants really play a role. And then they went through the same thing, gazed their fatigue, looked at their stress inventory. And then once a day, they had to gaze at their plant for 3 minutes. It was just hanging out at the desk, looking at the plant, thinking about the plant. So I see you're really not into this study very much.
I'm thinking if I had a plant, all I'd do is worry, how long is this thing going to last?
That's right.
And how am I going to find another one? I don't think that would reduce the stress at all.
You'd be worried whether the plant was going to stay alive,
yeah.
whether you're watering it too much.
Yeah.
Well, maybe because it was studied, these people were kind of, you know, they were nurtured on how to actually take care of the plant. Well, the result was, in this particular study, that when they gazed at the plant, they felt better. Only, once again, they felt like 25%, 30% of the people felt better gazing at a plant.
So they didn't have to work. They can gaze at the plant. I'd feel better, too.
They took 3 minutes from work. They probably had to make up 3 minutes at the end of the day when they clocked out. Well, although it's an interesting study, I think there's a role for plants on desks, because there's biophilia, there's the desire to be with Mother Nature. And although this study we'll call soft science, it still has a role to remind us that plants play a major role in our lives.
800-462-7413 is the number if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, how can we help?
Well, I wanted to get your thoughts on taking the over-the-counter drug Excedrin and taking it on a regular basis, basically every single day, mm-hmm. to treat chronic headaches. And mm-hmm. I've been doing it for quite a few years now.
Sure.
And at first I thought, you know, oh, it's harmless. But now with the new studies about taking aspirin every day and how now they're saying it's not good, I wanted to get your thoughts on taking Excedrin every day.
Oh, sure. So you're taking Excedrin migraine. Is that what you're taking?
Actually, it's called extra strength Excedrin.
Extra strength. Yeah, I think it's safe for most people. You know, the side effect is whether or not you're going to get acid indigestion, whether or not you're going to get gastritis, whether or not you're going to get a GI bleed because of the way you know, because that's what aspirin does. That's one of the main ingredients, if not the main ingredient in Excedrin. But I think if you're tolerating it, I don't see no reason not to do it, and I would continue doing it. I mean, are there side effects? Yes, but most people don't get side effects. So do you get an upset stomach from it at all?
Very seldomly.
Uh-huh.
It'll upset my stomach, but for the most part, no.
It does not. I mean, if it upsets, then you take a Tum, you know, a Tum or a Rolaid. How are your headaches? How much have they reduced them?
Excedrin is the only thing that seems to work,
mm-hmm.
And the reason I take it more often is it works really well as a preventative.
Right.
If I feel a headache,
right?
Yeah, if it starts to build, you know, I'll just take an Excedrin, and it just kills the headache. But yeah, I've tried so many other things, and one of my recent doctor visits, the doctor said, "Oh, that's not designed to take every day. You should stop taking that."
Oh no! Well, first of all, it was designed initially for pain and discomfort. The actual design of the drug, of all these drugs, like, you know, because they contain aspirin, it was really for pain and it was used. There is nothing wrong with taking aspirin every day. Is it wrong for some people? Yes, for some people it is. But if I had chronic daily headaches or I had migraines, I would take it. And frankly, I have aches and pains in my joint. And when I'm bothered, I take a couple of naproxen. Well, some doctors will say, don't take naproxen at 72. You run a cardiac risk. You run a risk of GI distress. And well, the answer is, if my joints ache and I don't move around, I run a risk with that. And if you're taking Excedrin and it's keeping you functional and great without pain, by all means do it. I think the risk is minimal. You know, the thing about risk is this. You drive a car, right?
Yes.
Do you ever drive when it's raining?
Yes.
Do you ever drive in the snow or when there's ice?
I used to, not mm-hmm. so much in Florida.
Yeah, so you used to. So every time you get in a car, you take a risk, right? There's a risk in the car. You buckle up in your seatbelt. It's not just the way you drive. It's the way the other guy drives. And there's a higher risk when it's raining, a higher risk when it's snowing, and a really high risk when it's icy. And we take that risk every day. We take it into consideration. We go in a car. 35,000 people a year roughly die in car crashes. Half of those caused by drunk drivers, meaning it's you. Most of the time it's not you. It's the other person that's in there. But we take and accept that risk. You have a small risk with Excedrin, but it has improved your life. If I were you, stay on it.
Great. Well, thank you very much. You've been a big help.
Thanks.
Thanks. We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413.
You know, it's interesting because some doctors are very, you know, right on the line. You shouldn't take that every day. That's not the way it was designed. I don't like the idea. Versus explaining what the risk is, let the patient decide. In his case, his life is much better. It's the only drug that works. He should stay on it.
800-462-7413, our number. Okay, Zorba, time now for our medical Mythbuster segment. And Zorba, this one is a twofer, or as they say in the retail world, a BOGO, buy one, get one.
A BOGO, okay.
First up, Curtis sent us the following email. Zorba, I've seen a commercial for a drug derived from jellyfish. It claims to improve short-term memory,
ooh,
but it's very expensive.
Ooh.
You've said before that no pill can improve memory. Is this still the case?
There's no proof that improves no pill that improves memory. And what we've shown today is that actually walking around for like 10 minutes in the morning and the evening, a couple of cups of coffee, that will improve your memory most likely. Save your money. Let's not destroy the jellyfish by making them into a pill.
And now, Zorba, a listener named Susan asked, I've read that using duct tape for several weeks will remove finger warts. Is this a myth?
No, it's not a myth. For a lot of people, duct tape is very, very effective for removing that wart. You have to keep it on. It is unsightly, so you might decide that you want to choose the color of duct tape and not have it that ugly gray.
Is Zorba your MacGyver? Share your story with us or just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Did you get the MacGyver thing?
I kind of got it, Tom, but you know, MacGyver, he's just not in my back pocket.
Yeah, a TV show, he frequently used duct tape to get him out of various predicaments.
Oh, right. Oh, right. I've got it. And my good friend Dan Barry does the same thing. He uses duct tape all the time. He has never leaves the house without duct tape because you never know when you might need it.
800-462-7413, our number. That's 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener in Sparta, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba and Tom.
Yeah, how can we help?
Well, I have a question about a product I recently saw advertised called Everlywell. Mm-hmm. And it is an at-home test to see if you have sensitivities to certain foods.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just wondering if you knew the validity of this, if mm-hmm. it was worth $159.
Okay. Well, first of all, are you sensitive to any foods? Why would you want to do it?
Well, I have many allergies that mm-hmm. I've been dealing with a lot of joint pain, muscle
mm-hmm.
pain,
mm-hmm.
bowel irregularity.
Got it.
Latest mm-hmm. headache.
Mm-hmm. So you've got a bunch of things that may be food-related or may be related to the biome in your intestine. This actually is not a small issue. We don't have a good way of measuring sensitivities or allergies to food. It has not been developed yet. So the $159 will go to some company, which will then actually tell you what's right, although it turns out it won't be right because there's not a lot of science behind it. And it's very, very difficult. So the recommendations of most allergists or many allergists are you try a food, you take it, you remove it, you take it, you remove it, and you see whether or not actually taking the food makes you makes you have discomfort or some sort of symptoms. But unfortunately, we don't have a good way of testing food allergies. We just don't have it. So we don't know what role they play a role. They undoubtedly play a role in certain people. Now, we know the full-blown reactions, like people are allergic to peanuts, develop, you know, hives or anaphylaxis. People are allergic to strawberries. We have a good friend of ours, Kay, and I remember I served Cockle St. Jacques, which is made with scallops, and she blew up and had a red face. So she's allergic to scallops, but she's not allergic to any other seafood. And so the answer is look at the food itself and make the decisions. I would save my money because I wouldn't trust the information that comes out from there.
Yeah, sounds good. I guess you sold me.
I sold you. I love it. I sold you on not spending. Well, way to go. Thank you for the compliment.
We appreciate that call. Thanks so much for calling. And before we head out today, Zorba, Get out your crowbar. It's time to pry open the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and share a listener question. This email came to us from Charlie in Hot Springs, North Carolina. Dr. Zorba, I recently turned 65, and for the past several months, I've had increasingly awful hangovers. I mean a day lost to nausea, vomiting, bedridden, with a headache, and a day of fasting. This happened again after one glass of wine last week, a wine I've drunk for years.
Oh.
Over the past year, I've given up beer, hard cider, and now wine. It does not happen every time, so raising a glass is like playing Russian roulette. I can and have gone weeks at a time without dram, so abstinence is not out of the question, but I fear it points to a systemic issue. I had a 5-year stretch of antibiotics due to infections and revision of a knee replacement. I've had my gallbladder removed, and I suffer from what appears to be malabsorption. These are foods I can only handle in minute proportions.
He's got some gut. He's got gut problems.
Be very interested in your opinion on this.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of gut problems that he has. Might be related to the 5 years of antibiotics he was on. That certainly would affect the biome that is in his intestine. That certainly could be a role. Sometimes when people cannot tolerate alcohol, what you do is you take, before you go out, you're going to have some beer or some wine, you take a Zyrtec, and you take 300 milligrams of Zantac or 40 milligrams of famotidine. And both of those together an hour before you go out may stop that allergic reaction. And some people, believe it or not, add an aspirin to that, and that seems to affect it too. But this is probably a histamine response to alcohol. Doesn't happen every time. So if you're going to go out and you know, hey, I'm going to have a glass of wine or two, I would try that. I would try that combination of essentially, like I said, Zyrtec, one Zyrtec tablet, 10 milligrams of Zyrtec, 300 milligrams of Zantac, or 40 of famotidine, and see if that works. Mm-hmm. And if not, you become a teetotaler. That's all you can do.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba. He's happy to give you the answer straight up, no chaser. Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.